For March the 8th, we talk about SimCity woes, what next gen means, and we ask you who your favorite developers are. Welcome to the 14th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Miney Smith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And welcome to the 14th level. I said that in the intro, but I haven't recorded that yet. Time weirdness. We're back after a string of bonus levels. I apologize for being remiss in doing the regular stuff, but a lot of positive reaction to the bonus levels, Ben, specifically the Walking Dead one. People like that. Although there were people who were saying, at least on Something Awful, that we are wrong about some things.
Like what?
They didn't.
You can't talk about that with us on.
No, he didn't cite specifics. He said he really enjoyed it. Man, I'm talking shit about somebody who listened. No, but just like this happens all the time with the shows, right? People say, man, I really, really like what you guys do. I spent the entire time like banging against my steering wheel because you're saying wrong shit. So, but the sentiment was, and I thank this person tremendously for listening, especially for offering feedback. It's so valuable. People don't listen to us for facts. They listen to us to be entertained. So,
and by the way, that's anytime I listen to an episode that I'm in, that's basically what I'm doing the entire time, just correcting myself and be like, you dumb.
I've gotten to the point where I can just coast on by with it because, there's no point being upset. I listen to myself enough to know that I'm full of hot air. So, yeah. So I would like to do more of those kind of things. I've got one thing in particular, coming along the line. This might be related to one of your news stories, Dennis, but,
ooh.
Who knows, right? But we'll announce more at a later time. So do you guys want to do a thing?
Let's do like a couple things.
Okay. So it's time for the brief, where we talk about things that happen in the world of video games and video game news. Does anybody have something big that they think is earth-shattering?
I have something that's old that I would like to get out of the way quicker than not.
Yes, it's been a little while since this happened, but I would like to address some of it at least.
Okay, yeah, because when was the last show we did?
It was before the PS4 announcement.
Oh wow. Okay, yeah, it was a while ago. Well, okay, so my thing was about the Academy Awards.
Ooh, okay.
So this is loosely tied to video games, but it was just mentioning that Wreck-It Ralph didn't win the best animated film.
Yeah, I thought that was a missed opportunity. I don't know if it should have won. I just didn't. I kind of didn't want Brave to win.
Well, I had seen Brave, and I had seen Wreck-It Ralph. Mm-hmm. And Brave had good animation, but other than that, Wreck-It Ralph totally was a better movie.
I thought Brave's story was weak.
I did too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Bug's Life, not a Wall-E, you know?
But guys. Hair physics.
It's hard to do, I know, but yeah, but yeah, Wreck-It Ralph didn't come out well, but oh well.
So I just wanted to mention that, and plus we had some of us had seen that movie together, so
yeah. Oh, we talked about it on the first episode of the show.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right.
Many a time ago. much a time ago, fuck.
Back on the first level when we still had lives.
when we were still alive. I forget at what point we became ghosts, but
at what point we became undead.
We've always been undead. We are the
but
walking
what
dead.
If we were dead all along? Okay.
Wreck-It Ralph snubbed. So who wants to go next?
I can go because I've got one I'm kind of excited about.
Cool.
I have been eyeing XCOM: Enemy Unknown for the longest time. Like it's a game that is on my must play list, but I have so many other games that I already own that I haven't played that I've been delaying getting it. To the point where I've actually walked into a GameStop, picked up the box from the shelf, looked it over, turned it around in my hands, and just gone, I can't do it, and put it down and walked out. But they just announced recently that XCOM is coming to Mac, which, you know, obviously now that's what I own. It's actually a machine that could play the game. And that that might be a format for the game that's you know easy for me to dip into. They haven't said when it's coming out, but it is going to come with all the DLC.
Oh, cool.
To date. Yeah, so I'll have to see what price it comes out at and how that compares to the PS3 version. But I kind of think that if I'm faced with, for the same price, the PS3 version and no DLC, or the Mac version with all the DLC, I'd be pretty predisposed towards the Mac version. So that might be a purchase I make in my first major shift towards PC gaming. For certainly my first full price PC game.
Okay, so
this is the point where I was wrong.
I was going to strongly urge you to not call playing a game on a Mac PC gaming. It is. Ooh. You are playing a game on a personal computer with a keyboard and a mouse in front of a screen. That is,
is this a bad thing?
People get really upset, like when you say PC is anything but a Windows machine that has a, you know, blah blah blah. It's more a matter of semantics, really.
Well, and technically, isn't Mac's not PC? I thought they switched to.
Nope. They're on x86, so it's not even just a matter.
It's x86. I thought they switched over to a new architecture.
No, they switched from PowerPC to x86.
Oh, okay. I thought they switched to PowerPC.
Yeah, no, they switched away from it. So,
it is now technically a PC. I'm not sure how I feel. They
called it PowerPC. So,
yeah. So the other reason I would have for buying it on PC as opposed to PS3 is that's easier to play, like, you know, up in bed or just around the house or whatever. And I've kind of been looking for more games that I can get into on a screen that is more movable and has a headphone jack.
Yes, so. that would be important, especially for something as, like, you know, that you're going to spend a lot of time with. However, what I will say is from playing the demo and also from hearing other people who've played the full game, it actually works really, really well with the controller, possibly better than with mouse and keyboard.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, those are things that I've heard.
Is it a grid-based game?
Yes. It's XCOM, so think like tactical kind of stuff.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And then the one other reason I was interested in buying it is because it's that tactics kind of game where the, you know, actual skill and reflexes with the controller are very unimportant. I thought it might be, you know, I've been looking for more co-op games, but also just more games that are fun to play with other people around.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing XCOM and, like, you know, stressing over decisions with someone else and, you know, I'd be the one inputting the commands, but I'd still be, you know, consulting and making decisions with other people around seemed like a fun way to do kind of unintended co-op.
You're describing like a special kind of hell that I would never subject myself to.
Really? Really? Yeah. Collaboration?
Yes.
says the man who, like, collaborates for a living.
I didn't say I liked it, you know.
I hate you all.
I just, you know, it's, you know, it's a thing. yeah.
So that's it's coming out.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I saw that and I was like, man, I could actually play it. It's like, oh, I've been able to play it all along. I just haven't bought it.
What are Mac ports usually pretty good?
Yeah, nowadays they are. They used to be kind of shit, but they're good now.
Okay.
Yeah.
How seamless XCOM as partially controller supported? How is that even possible?
they probably just can't save full. Like a lot of people that I've, like, some people I've heard that played on PC just plugged in their Xbox 360 controller and played it like that. And it's well supported. That's quickly becoming like the go-to way to control a lot of games.
Definitely. I mean, most like platform or action things.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So the ton of interesting stuff happening on PC, Mac. You know that kind of game. There's some neat stuff, and that kind of leads into my story. So SimCity. Kind of two things there. A Mac version was announced. Going to be coming out a little bit later this spring. I'm really excited about that because I've never met a SimCity that I didn't like. And having one that I'll be able to run on my platform of choice will be nice and nifty.
Just wait until the Sim Ghetto expansion. You won't like that.
you know, as long as I was going to make some kind of joke about drivers, and as long as you drive driver through it pretty fast with the windows up, you're fine. But I don't know that wasn't even that goof was like wrong from the start.
You could dig it out, but you need a backup.
Also kind of racist. But
I was wrong like three words into that sentence.
Yeah, and I couldn't stop. It was just going to resolve itself of its own momentum. Yeah. But no, it looks good. I've been watching videos of that and salivating. However, one of the more controversial aspects of the SimCity, this most recent one, is that it has always on online requirements, much like Diablo or StarCraft or any stuff like that. Really controversial. People think like, oh, it's the publisher being greedy, et cetera, et cetera. And when in reality, it probably is just features that they want to implement or, et cetera. But the bigger problem with that is, so it was launched today. We're recording this on Tuesday. I believe this was the release day. And like they're having a lot of problems with it in terms of like keeping the servers online, that they actually have to like log into and authenticate with. So like people are unable to connect to the servers to download the game. They're unable to sign into the servers to start a game. Connections will go down in the middle of the game, booting them from the game, often causing lost data or weird glitches and maps and things like that. That's a real bummer.
And this is the same kind of problem that Diablo 3 had, right?
I don't remember it too much with Diablo 3. I mean, every MMO in the history of existence has had this problem at launch, right?
Yeah, Diablo 3 had it very badly.
Okay.
Really, all of them have it. I mean, that's why it's a horrible idea. But Ubisoft had it.
With Assassin's Creed, half a year ago. Yeah. They've had that problem, especially like when Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood came out, like the PC ports of those.
Yeah.
Although that's 3 years ago, but. Yeah, so it's a real logistical problem for them. So I'm kind of glad I'm waiting for the Mac version to come out later this spring because I don't have to be subjected to that.
See, I never played past the first SimCity. After that, I found the game was just too complex for me to actually play. Have they dialed that down, or is it how's it evolved?
They've simplified it, so you no longer have to like run water to each individual area, etc. It plays out, from what I've seen and from what I've read, like more like The Sims, and that it's okay. Kind of more small scale. Yeah,
I was gonna say I know in like 2000, you could implement like in depth, in detail, like tax policy and stuff.
Yeah. I think that stuff's under the hood, but I don't think that it's like right there at the forefront.
So quick SimCity story. I have not spent much time with this game, but the one time I played it, I can't remember what version or when or whatever, but somehow I got the concept of water towers, but I hadn't yet found water pipes in the menu. And for some reason, I just didn't realize that should probably exist. Didn't go looking for it. And so I thought wow, this is kind of an unrealistic simulation. I'm having to put water towers every three blocks. And, I kept on getting these notifications like, people are leaving the water running just for fun and people are taking baths, filling up their entire bathroom or, just all these funny messages for you've got too much water. Uh-huh. And then eventually I figured it out, but it kind of impressed me how much thought went into the flavor text for something that would probably, happen very, very rarely. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that in games where something that, only 1% of people are actually going to experience has still been well thought out.
Yeah. And they really lean on that in terms of trying to create that. So I don't know. I'm still super excited about it. The technical details, so long as I'm able to play the game when it comes out, should be good. And finally, David, do you have any stories?
No, I really don't have anything.
Attaboy.
The grind. What you been grinding on?
Ah, man, I don't know. this chick at a club, you know, no big deal.
It's where for we those talk listening, about, yes, we will make that joke every week. Deal with it.
It's, you know what? Really, it's just Ben who insists on it.
Yep.
He cops to it. Okay, cool. Any new business to attend to?
I've got two games to talk about real quick.
Do it. Jump.
So the first that I've been playing is Vanquish. Ooh. Which is kind of the cult classic shooter. And crap, I'm blanking on all of a sudden on who developed it. So
maybe that was the same person who made Resident Evil 4.
What's that?
Made by the same person who developed Resident Evil 4, I believe.
It was either Platinum or Grasshopper.
Platinum, I think, is who it was. I haven't spent too terribly much time with it, but I totally understand why this game is kind of a cult hit. It's got that perfect level of innovativeness and weirdness that kind of lends itself to that. Mm-hmm. So it's a third person shooter that doesn't do too much to stand out, except for that you have a rocket strapped to your back that allows you to boost around levels at insanely fast speeds. Mm-hmm. Basically you have the ability to flank at any time. and that really changes the way you play the game. They get a lot of use out of it. You know, there are bosses where, you know, that you really, you know, I was stumped for a while until I realized, oh, you know, I should be zipping around behind it and all over the place to, you know, keep on moving. And where I feel like most third person shooters, especially those with a cover mechanic, mm-hmm. encourage you to find a spot, hug into a wall, and then just sit there.
Yeah. Post up.
This one really encourages you to just zip around and go nuts. They use that really well. So it's a lot of fun. You feel really empowered and cool. It's got a lot of cool animations for you, doing flips and stuff as you're rocketing around. So that their core mechanic works really, really well. And it truly changes the way that you play.
Yeah.
One complaint I have about it is for all this mobility they give you, they really haven't thought out the melee combat, which, you know, if you're able to zip right up to an enemy at any time, you would think makes sense for you to be able to, you know, have some sort of cool finishing move.
But something really, to do when you're up there, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I can't tell you the number of times where there's a new battle and I'm like all pumped up and I zip in and, you know, I wind up, you know, in cover right across from someone who's in cover on the other side of like a barricade or something. And it's just kind of like, how you doing? Hold on. Let me back up a bit here. Stay there. No. Okay. Now I'm good. Okay. Here we go. And now I can shoot at him. So like, it's weird that it seems like so much thought has been put into the ability to move so fast that's like the one piece that they missed.
the end result of what you would do by getting that close.
Yeah. I mean, and you can still use it to like get behind them. You just have to get far enough behind.
So you have to overshoot them, which like every game teaches you not to do.
Exactly.
Maybe it's actually, maybe it's trying to, you know, really make a commentary on life that we spend so much time, you know, worrying about where we're going to go. And we don't actually think about what we'll do when we get there.
But I mean that, you know, you learn your way around that. So, but yeah, it's maybe that's another reason why it's a cult classic is it's too early to call it a classic, a cult hit, is that there's that hidden meaning there. It's weird for me to be noticing this, but the game also really made me feel like I was playing on a next gen machine. Like there are a lot of boss fights in this game. It's really kind of funny for a third person shooter. You know, they always have boss fights.
Okay. By next gen, do you mean this current gen that we're talking about? Or
I felt
like,
yeah, to clarify terms, I felt like I was playing on a powerful piece of hardware.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit absurd that we're still that, like, people still do this. Like, I still hear people call, you know, refer to PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 as next gen, and it really just makes my blood boil just a little bit.
So
we know your weakness now.
I don't mind it until they announce the next generation. So like now I feel like it's kind of ridiculous to call like PS3 next gen because
the grace period has ended.
Well, we know what the next gen is.
I think they should have to refer to the PS4 as next gen
it's next like year. Art how we're currently in post-modern.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so there are a lot of bosses in the game, and so with it comes a lot of spectacle, and like just the crazy explosions that go on. The one boss fires these like multi rockets where just the entire screen is swarming with rockets, and all of it without dropping a frame rate once. I can't remember the last game that made me kind of sit up and pay attention. That wow, that's really impressive. To be watching that happening.
Yeah, spectacle.
There was a sense of spectacle there that I feel like I've gotten numb to in some ways. And it's not like this is a graphically superior. The level design and technical prowess overall is actually pretty status quo, pretty par for the course. But just for some reason, the way that they've used it made me notice. So that was kind of cool. I it was weird though, because I got to a point where the boss that I was fighting with these multi rockets was going crazy, and I got him so he was exploding, and I had the urge to pan my camera away from him so that I would not slow down the game.
That's weird.
And I don't know how that has been subconsciously branded into me. I don't know if I do that in other games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that urge came up, and I was like, that is. Wow, that's really weird.
Yeah. You're like conditioned to
Yeah, so it's like I said, it didn't the action didn't slow down a single frame, so that was really cool.
Yeah.
So that's Vanquish. Mm-hmm. And then I also started playing Dear Esther.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I was wondering what happened with that.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned to you when I first got it, this was a gift from Cole, which I very much appreciate. I think it was a birthday gift, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I was going to try to play it with my wife just cause it seemed like, something interesting. And again, looking for those co-op opportunities or
co-op.
This time you're going to have to edit in a rim shot. You're on fire, man. Two for two there. this seemed like the ideal kind of game for that. And so we finally found some time where we were both just hanging out to play the first chapter of it.
Yeah.
And my gosh, this thing is beautiful.
Yeah.
Like just every facet of it. It's an incredibly simple game. It's in the first person, but you really just walk around and look at things. I don't even know. And again, I haven't finished it, but I don't even know if there's really meaningful puzzles to solve. You just experience this environment and hear, snippets of letters read to you in a very soothing voice. It's a great experience. And one thing that I kind of feel like helps it be that way, or just, I was thinking about this. There's no other characters that you meet, at least in the first chapter. And with that, like there's no uncanny valley to worry about, so that the landscapes and everything that you're walking through just really stand out and look great. And I'm sure a lot of games do that, but you're constantly having to work through these NPCs that just aren't quite right. Whereas there's no, uncanny valley to mess with that in Dear Esther.
Yeah.
I don't know if that thought is worth anything, but it's absolutely a gorgeous game.
It's an interesting result of like every action having room to breathe,
Spend a lot of time just walking in this game.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically hold W the game, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's barely even a game. I don't want to get into that discussion. What is game? But it defies like what actually is there. I would argue that it's a worthwhile media experience, and that is as bold of a claim as I'm willing to make. But there's no immediacy. There's no like need to drive forward. So you can actually like once you kind of shake off the need to progress, you can actually like focus on some kind of exploration. The only thing that like really bugged me about it was the walk speed.
But yeah, there's no like run.
Yeah, which, you know, it's just one of those things. How, you know, that only gets to be a problem if you get to a dead end, like if there are multiple paths. And one of them, and then you have to, if there's any kind of backtrack, then not like all of your, you know, sense of amazement and wonderment kind of just,
I think I've only backtracked twice that I can think of. And the first time there, you're right, it was like that. The second time though, there was new dialogue that was given to me as I was backtracking. So it, you know, I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah. That's fine. As long as there's more story that's being kind of revealed to you.
And man, you talk about story. This is a case study in being able to appreciate something without understanding it, at least at this point. All the dialogue that's given to you is just kind of like, well, here's a snippet of a letter and it's up to you to kind of piece together what's going on. And only at the very end of the chapter did we start feeling like we had any idea what they might be talking about, or, you know, that something might be wrong, or, you know, how these people might be connected, that sort of thing. So it's interesting to see the difference in a Dragon Age or Dragon Age is probably the worst offender. I was going to say Mass Effect, but like they thrive on building a world through every single item and every single snippet of something that's in the game for a second has like a 6-paragraph entry. and it's all so completely fleshed out. Whereas this is completely minimalist. And it builds a completely different atmosphere. But that atmosphere is no less rich.
Yeah. There are some interesting things about the way that the game is put together. And the way that narrative is kind of presented, that if I told you them, it would diminish your enjoyment, like at least at this first go. So I'm not going to say them.
Okay.
But you are getting out of it what you should be getting out of it right now.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And I'm sure anyone else who has played the game, who's listening is nodding in understanding.
In sage agreement. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my grind.
Cool. Yeah. No, I'm happy that you're playing it. That goes on sale a lot.
Really?
You know, it's normally only $10, but like it was just on sale this past weekend for like $250 or something. You know, it's never expensive, but it's easier to justify when it's dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to go because I don't really have anything. My computer died this past week and I've been getting ready to move. And I also went home the weekend before this last one. I've been doing taxes and also, I had to beat Final Fantasy Tactics for WoF. All of that stuff piled on meant that I couldn't play Hitman like I intended to. Sorry, Ben.
It's all right.
Wait, did you just say, I'm sorry, I didn't play video games. I was too pretty. Busy playing video games.
a little bit. Like it's doing homework. I was busy doing homework. There we go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Any discretionary video game time I had went towards Final Fantasy Tactics, which is a monster of a game. That episode came out yesterday when you're listening to this. So I've got two. First one, Bittrip Runner. I know, yes. Dennis, you've been talking about that. I've heard really interesting stuff about, God, I hate the word interesting. Sorry. I've heard really cool stuff about Bittrip Runner 2 or just Runner 2. Seen some cool videos and things like that. And I kind of want to play the first one cause I own it, before I jump in and buy the new one, but, it's real neat. I like how it's a rhythm game, not really in disguise. It doesn't really do much to hide it. Like the aesthetic a lot. I like the, it's funny because like it's mechanically really similar to like things that I don't like, the speeder bike levels in Battletoads or the surfing levels in Mega Man 8, you know, just any of those things where like something's coming at you and you have to figure out which button you need to press to not die. Right. But the way that it increases your vocabulary, you know, you start out with just jump, then it's, you know, duck and slide, and then there's a kick. I've only gotten to the kick so far. But yeah, it's real cool. And then how you progress through every level as you pick up those bandages and it fills out the music. And then ultimately when you have the rainbow coming from behind you and you look like you're on the cover of an Atari game. And even just that nice little touch, like whenever I cross the finish line, I jump. So I do like a little arc as I land into the checkered flag. So it leaves that right there as he runs off the screen, you know, little stuff like that.
Yeah, all I have to say is dum 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 boosh. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, the way it builds it out is really cool.
I'm just glad I'm not the only one that every time I see the cover of that game thinks they're Atari.
Well, I mean, that's what they're going for. If you look at the cover of the original Pitfall, you know, Pitfall Harry has a little rainbow coming out. I think they use that device in several games. So it's a thing. I mean, down to the point where the bonus stages in between, you know, if you perfect a level to get more gold, it's like styled like Pitfall.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, so that's a reference to Pitfall, and not like this didn't start out as some random Flash game.
Oh no, like it's straight up Pitfall. To the point where they put that fuzz over top of it to make it look like it's on a shitty CRT.
Or going over an
RF adapter. Yeah.
Huh. I assumed that it was like some throwback to an early version of the game or something like that, but it's still a throwback just to Pitfall. Interesting.
Yeah. So I like that game. I like that game a lot. Second game is one that I'm a little bit more lukewarm on. So there seems to be a bumper crop of iOS games that are meant to be like knockoff versions of other popular indie games. So a while back, I talked about a game for iOS called League of Evil, which is really just Super Meat Boy, but with virtual controls. And this game that I'm playing, Gravity Duck, is except with virtual controls and a duck instead of a space alien. So it's a platformer where instead of jumping, you reverse gravity, right? And you can run into these little nodes that make it so that instead of like, you know, falling up or down, you fall left or right. And there may be like little wrinkles on top of it. You know, occasionally I'll dip into the App Store just to see like what's on, you know, on sale, like what's new, just it's a good way to just look at the front page of the games and be like, oh, that looks neat, I'll buy that. Bing. Okay, cool. I hate it. Delete it. It's gone.
Yeah.
I'm only out $1. Or I love it and it sticks around. Then I play it in line at the bank. Or I don't go to the bank anymore. So at the post office. Yeah.
You go to the post office?
What's that?
You go to the post office?
He just robs the post office for money now.
Yeah. them stamps, dog. Them stamps. Keep on rising and rising.
That's
price.
Why they're not going to come on Saturdays anymore.
So, yeah, Gravity Duck, not too terribly impressed with it. I can't get behind virtual controls. Like,
yeah, they're awkward.
Go ahead.
What are virtual controls?
So that is my ham-fisted term that I use to describe where it puts virtual buttons on the screen of a touch device. So you have a graphical overlay on the left-hand side of the screen of a D-pad, and then a couple of buttons on the right. But because everything feels like a flat screen, because that's what it is. And you know, you're looking at what's happening on the screen, and you know, your thumbs are covering up these buttons. It's real easy to just like not hit the direction that you want to go, or not hit the button that you're intending to hit.
Yeah. Do you have any?
That doesn't seem like that would work.
Do you have any tactile response with it when you play?
None. The ones that I've seen that work that work better is where there's like one. So it knows that if you're holding down on an area and then you move it around, that like tracks it. So it's kind of like using a trackpad on a mouse. So instead of like having to press a discrete button, it's just kind of like, oh, he's holding his thumb just a little bit higher than where he first started, so he wants to move up, or a little bit lower, so he wants to move down. And then if it's a one button game, just any kind of like discrete tap while you're holding it, while you're holding somewhere, will be treated as a button press, right? As opposed to counting on you actually being able to hit those buttons.
Agree.
And it sucks because I'll look at a game and I'll think, hey, that looks pretty neat. Like, oh, that's a neat name. It looks like a neat concept. And like the screens won't show virtual controls. And then you load it up, and then you see the virtual controls on there. It's like, fuck.
Like, you got me, App Store.
I'm not going to have fun with this thing ever. So, bye.
Yeah, people need to go to school on, like, The Rayman Jungle Run is the one that comes to mind, where they're buttons, but it's the button is like the left side of the screen and the right side of the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, it's that simple.
Swipes and gestures and things like that. It just seems ill-advised to try and shoehorn that. And there are like peripherals that you can buy that, you know, it's like a Bluetooth controller for the thing, and some games support that, but just why?
It's lazy thinking. Like, I've grown up using buttons, so yeah. Naturally I'm going to force buttons into an iOS game, and that's the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially when, I mean, the whole point of tablets is, hey, we've got all these new ways you can interact with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at something like Final Fantasy Tactics, which I've spent 30 hours in over the past month. For fucking real. and that plays perfectly on a tablet, because you select units and you select, you know, things on a menu by just tapping on the thing that you want to do. Like, it makes perfect sense for that. It is, you know, people want to put a platformer on the system without actually designing their platformer to work for the system.
Yeah. Lazy bastards.
Bummer. Who wants to go next?
Hold on. I would be remiss if I didn't do what inverts gravity other than a space alien? More space aliens, very small stones, a duck.
Wow.
Monty Python.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, so that is a reference. Monty Python is a real blind spot for me. Yes.
Huh.
I know, Bummer. Right? Like, some people watch Doctor Who. I don't watch Doctor Who.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
People say this, and I do not disbelieve them. But I just that you have geek blind spots, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, sorry to derail.
That is perfectly fine. Now, who wants to go next without interruptions?
I'll go next.
Yes, I will conscript.
I'll break the silence.
Go. Somebody do a thing.
The only game that I played this last week has been Far Cry 3. I've pushed along in that. But I've made some strides, because now I understand how the game works. So I'm a little bit happier with that. Since I played it, I don't know if I talked about it last week. I guess I did, but that audio is lost. So from 2 weeks ago.
The lost level.
Yeah.
There is, if anyone looks at level. That enough, there is a horrible, staticky, unedited full level. God.
That'll be an Easter egg.
That on yourself.
Yeah. We're going to put that out in the level box set that comes out at the end of our career. The box will just be a coffin.
No, that's like when we die and we're all famous, and they're like, they go back and find all of our lost works. That's going to be the crap
that they
got. God, I hope not. There are a couple of really bad TDRKs that we've never put out.
that's like Kipling. They just like published some lost poetry from Kipling. And you got to know this is the stuff that he wrote. And he's like, ugh, yeah. I hope no one ever reads this.
It's like publishing Cobain's diary. You just don't fucking. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know they, going back to 5 minutes ago, they do that fairly often with Doctor Who. Because I guess back in, like, I don't know, right. Relatively recently, the BBC, anything older than like 5 years, they just destroy.
Hmm.
Wow.
Didn't know that.
Huh.
So Ben.
Yeah, Ben.
Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3.
Anyway. The only experiences I've had with it over the last couple of weeks is initially I was kind of bummed out because I thought they had a really poor leveling up system. Because one of the first things I did is explore the island, and kind of the way that you progress, you have the option of either doing story missions or you can kind of explore at your own pace and you kind of level up that way. And when you go and explore on your own, it's kind of a mix of Assassin's Creed, where you have to climb towers to unlock the map and kind of see the general area that you're in. Yeah. And then you have to take over bases to get control of the island. So I guess it's equal parts of Assassin's Creed and then the gang territories from Grand Theft Auto. But one of the things I was bummed about is I had climbed all the towers pretty quickly and I'd leveled up a bunch of times or had a bunch of skill points or whatever. And so I thought that there was just terrible pacing and that they open up stuff too soon. But as I've continued to play and done more story missions, it's balanced out to the point where now I have to actually choose what I want to level up and have to be more judicious. So I've been happy that that problem was resolved. But other than that, I figured out the mechanics of the game. One of the things that's really cool about it is it kind of encourages you to upgrade things yourself. So like you have like a wallet for your money. You have like a rucksack for items and things. And then you have ammo pouches, rocket pouches or whatever. You know, a bunch of different pouches or whatever. The way you upgrade those is you have to go hunting. So to get a bigger wallet, you might have to get bear skin. So you can look on the map, and the map has animal icons on it showing where their different breeding grounds are.
This is heartbreaking. So
you might have to go to a bear territory and kill a bear. But one of the animals that you have to get is a shark in the ocean. And you know how sharks are terrifying, right?
like a creature designed specifically to kill? Yes.
Yeah. So that terror translates really well into this video game where you basically stand on the beach outside of a shark spot, shoot the sharks from a distance, but then you have to go swim out and collect their pelts in shark-infested waters. So you have to do it really quickly and swim back. You know,
that sounds
it's a terrifying experience.
Yeah.
As a side note, that have you found out that alligators are a thing?
Yeah.
gets much worse.
They implemented it in a way that it's quite startling in one of the cases where you see it. So, yeah, I found that out last night while I was playing. Yes. And yes. Terrifying as well.
So yeah, that sounds like an excellent experience or a neat mission that is like hidden in like a 50 system pileup.
What do you
in
mean?
It just sounds
too complex. You need to kill this type of animal to increase, you know, to increase this type of, you know, carrying capacity, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like the worst part of Assassin's Creed. Carried over.
I didn't think so.
Stated out loud, it feels too complex.
Okay.
See,
I mean,
for the most part, it's just kill all animals, and take
when
their
in doubt.
Take their outsides.
take their outsides.
Even though the animation for it every time is him taking out its heart, it looks like.
Well, he has to clean it first.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The animation is him sticking an organ in his pouch and then sometimes saying like gross or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
how done are you with Komodo dragons?
I've only had like one experience with Komodo dragons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those are like the bane of my existence in that game.
I've only had the one Trial of the Hunter mission with like the red Komodo dragon or something like that. But going back to the upgrade system, it's pretty well implemented, I felt, because I mean basically what would happen is say, okay, what do I not like right now? It's like, okay, well my wallet's full, so I would like to have more money. It's like, and so I go to the menu and look and be like, okay, I need to kill some dogs. So I'll go to a dog territory.
I go to dog land.
Yeah.
Which is really just a suburban neighborhood.
The island is surprisingly civilized.
Yeah. With a rabbit.
Yeah, it's Long Island is the island.
That's the reveal. Yeah.
It was Earth all along.
Monsters? You thought they were monsters? Yeah.
But no, anyway, so you go and do that. But, I mean, it's kind of like an immediate payback. You know, like whatever you want to invest your time in doing, you get rewarded for doing that. So in a way, it's kind of similar to Skyrim in the sense that, you know, like whatever you kind of want to direct your attention to, that gets built up and that gets improved upon.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit different. It's more active in this game and not passively upgraded, I guess, which would probably be better. But anyway, so that's fun. And after I kind of finished upgrading all the things I wanted to upgrade, I started going more into the storylines. And so the story is fine. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's kind of weak. So whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine enough. I would say that.
It is passable.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So,
do you guys have any questions about the game?
No, I'm curious about it. Like for me, that's it's like when it's $25 or less, I'll probably pick it up. But
okay. That's reasonable.
Yeah. It's just a matter of how much I want to play it. You know, like right now it's a matter of when do I buy it? And I have three games that are in my, like in my radar to buy right now. SimCity, BioShock Infinite, and Tomb Raider, almost entirely in that order.
Ooh, Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider looked really, really good.
Yeah. Tomb Raider, like it's getting like huge reviews too. I'm
excited. That's one of those games that I keep on forgetting I am excited for. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have all those reviews remind me.
I get it. I get it entirely. I mean, I forgot that it was a thing. I've been excited for it since they originally announced it. It's funny, linking it back to Far Cry 3 for a second, I didn't realize that it was open world on an island where everybody was trying to kill you. So like to me, it sounded like reading the reviews, you know, today, because it came out today, made it sound like it was Far Cry 3 meets Assassin's Creed. Meets Uncharted. I know that's like the laziest possible way to, you know, describe a game, but it looked really, really good. Yeah.
Expect to hear more.
Yeah, for real.
It's kind of funny. I'm sure you can like track games throughout our episodes where there's like a sequence to who's playing it when. And so the life of a game is just like each of us giving our perspectives at a different time.
Yeah. It'll after Ben's done with it here, like in a week or so, cause that's how he do.
I bet there's some like crazy rule to it where it's like, you know, if Ben and Dennis play a game, then David is likely to play it. However, if Cole plays a game, but Ben doesn't, then David actually doesn't usually get to it. However, if Dennis, Ben, and David play a game, Cole will never play it. It's like some crazy rule set.
It would be interesting to chart the games that we've played and when, and to see who's affected whom.
See, I feel like at least for me, that would be very. It would almost entirely match up to how much everyone else liked it versus when it came on sale on Steam.
Well, like, you know, somebody's like sitting out there in a room like that is lined with our show notes and they're connecting it with colored yarn. Oh, and if they're not, I hope so. I hope that it happens soon, you know, just by a suggestion. And if it doesn't happen soon, it will probably be me.
how many episodes did we get up to of DTR if we're going to track it back to then?
Oh, plenty. We got up to plenty. Yeah.
So good. Have fun investing that three times 150 hours.
I have a lot of mathematician friends, but I don't think any of them watch the show. So.
I'm just trying to think of like a good way to represent that information visually. All I can think of is like a Gantt chart, but I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, what does it take for something to rise above the noise? Like, is it a game where, you know, that somebody talks about for two or more episodes, but it becomes a thing that they did, or?
I'd say it should be if the person played it to its completion. So
that's even harder.
Well,
see, but I haven't played a game to its completion.
maybe say 50% or more or something. They're, you know, like they invest a decent amount of time in it.
Yeah,
I guess.
Like enough to say that they played it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe something like 3 or more weeks or 50% or something like that, and then. And then just but isolate it so that you put all the games on the same level. So you're just following who played it first, then who played it after them, or, you know, who played it at the same time.
Yeah.
Just when you thought this podcast couldn't get any more self-centered and masturbatory.
I was about to make that same point. Just the fact that we turn on these microphones is bad enough, but now we're running like regressive analysis on our habits. So, oh man, I'm sure there is a pattern though, but, David, what up?
So, I broke down and finally bought for the first time, but activated my trial version of Spreadsheets in Space.
Oh, Eve?
Ooh.
So, yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny. It kind of goes back to, I'm not sure if this was the real last week's podcast or the last lost level, but where we are talking about, you know, I mentioned I don't like puzzle games generally. Because, you know, once I, you know, figure something out, I don't really feel the motivation to actually go through with the whole puzzling thing. So I feel like Eve, it's, you know, like, wait, you mean to say there's a game where you set everything up in extreme detail and then the game just plays for you? It's like perfect.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't know. I'm really enjoying it. I noticed the other day that, you know, most of my game time involves me running deliveries through space, you know, just periodically updating my FTL points.
Okay.
While watching Futurama. So I don't know what that says, but
I think you found the optimal way to play the game.
So.
Yeah. So like, are you playing with people that you know, or is this just you venturing into the depths of space?
Just playing on my own. At some point I'm going to have to find a corporation because the game's really built around that.
Yeah. Like everybody that I've heard, gets involved in it. They basically sign up with somebody that will provide them with ships.
Right.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, it's not so much, you know, it's not like it's a game where it's, you know, soloing unfriendly. It's more just, you know, there's a lot of effort put into, like, the metagame aspects.
Okay.
So just like, you know, like, I've just started getting into mining. And, you know, you can really, you know, go into it as a solo miner and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, things you can upgrade, different ships, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, like, high-end corporations will put in, like, whole mining operations where, you know, they'll have, like, a factory ship that they have to, like, manually warp in there and, you know, 10, you know, mining ships and then a bunch of fighters flying around protecting the whole operation. So, you know, it really emphasizes kind of the meta game, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like they take advantage of the economies of scale, right?
Exactly.
Hmm.
So, the only thing I'd say negative about it so far is it's some of the missions are just very poorly set up. In terms of, like, you know, I fly around, like I said, an industrial ship, so it's completely unarmed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was following a mission chain for one of my, you know, one of the missions, and I, you know, end up, you know, the last mission, the chain, you know, it requires combat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I have to fly halfway across the galaxy to get a ship that, you know, has guns. And by the time I get there, I find out that the guns I have can't even damage the mm-hmm. enemy. It, you know, the shield regenerates faster than I can shoot.
Okay.
Mm.
So just there's a number of things where that's not its strong suit.
Right.
But
I mean, how many people actually do the missions that are like laid out for them? Like most of the stuff that I have read about it and know about it are like people who, you know, are just kind of like making their own fun, Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of what it is. It's kind of funny because, you know, there really isn't any goal, which is kind of weird.
Okay.
In terms of, like, there's just all these ways to make money and stuff like that. But the only thing to really spend money on for the most part is, you know, more power and stuff like that to get more money in control.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a feedback cycle.
Right. But, I mean, but it's a lot of fun. It's interesting that your skills level up over time, you know, just regardless of if you're logged on or not. And that's the only thing, you know, you don't actually get experience from kills. You just, you know, set something training and it trains over time.
Huh. Okay.
So.
Weird.
It sounds like, I mean, for all the depth in it, it sounds like it's something that's great to have on ambiently while you're doing something else. Like you said, while watching Futurama.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's what I did is, you know, I'm trying to catch up on some TV and get my house clean, you know, get back in shape, stuff like that. So I found it's really good for, you know, I'm more likely to actually clean if I can be like, okay, I can clean up, you know, five things during this jump before I have to update all my, you know, my next FTL jump.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Like on the surface, it sounds absurd to say like I love this game because I don't have to be actively engaged in playing it,
right?
Or like it's a plus that I don't have to play this game to like it. But it's yeah, I can sympathize with it.
Well, and it's actually, it's, you know, it's just, it's very relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like me without, like, actual FTL keeping it in the background, you know, playing right. It turn by turn. Yeah. Huh. Anything else?
No, I think that's about it.
Cool. Let us move on. Okay. So...
Oh, I wanted to do a sound.
Let's do a sound.
Ding, 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 ding. Ah, that's not a video game sound.
Okay.
Bonus round.
So, guys, it's time for the bonus round. I have a question for you to lead this off, okay? What do iguana bee, digital eel, and rocket owl have in common?
Pokemons?
Close.
Digimons.
Yes, they are Digimons. Digital monsters, Digimon are the champions. No, it's... I was talking about those earlier this week. I forget in what context.
In fact, the only person talking about them earlier this week.
It used to be so cool.
We're going to get so much free merchandise. I'm sure there exists in some middle school around this world the drawer that is full of beeping, just dead battery Digimon.
Kill me.
Yeah. Well, actually, all of those three are game developers. And for this week's bonus round, which has been lovingly crafted by listener Jeffrey Lawton, I'm going to give you guys four studio names, okay? So three of them are made up, and one is real. Okay? Ooh. Yeah. So what I need you guys to do, whoever thinks they've got it, whoever thinks they have the real one, say it. And then if that's not right, the next person can go.
Okay.
And I'll keep track of who wins. There are more than five, otherwise we would do it in a more orderly fashion. But we're going to do a little bit of chaos, and I will be the person who decides who wins. All right? Wait until I read all of them to go. All right?
Okay.
Counterfeit Monkey, Fat Shark, Blank Stare Studios, Honest Otter. Go.
Fat Shark.
Damn it. Yep. He gets it. They developed War of the Roses in 2008.
So, oh, wait. So we have to say the real one? I thought it was three real and one fake.
Nope. It's three fake, one real.
Okay.
Listen more closely.
By the way, Counterfeit Monkey should be a real developer. Yes. I would buy those games.
Oh, Crater. That's where I played from them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The real game for me is going to be them being like, wait, but what did I play that I know that?
well, Geolaw, he actually put in like what series and stuff they're known for.
Nice. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's really thoughtful. This is really cool. he did all of my work for me. moving on. People Can Fly, Haters Can Hate, Cliff Jump Games, Undone Entertainment.
People Can Fly.
Whoa, he gets it twice.
Oh, you're kidding me. David, you've played too many games.
No, I just read the Steam sales every day.
Oh. Yes. People Can Fly developed Bulletstorm in 2011.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
My condolences. All right, this one's a little bit trickier, okay? Fatty Bear, Bug Zapper, Under Bear, Bug Bear.
Bug Zapper.
Nah.
Bugbear.
Ben gets it. Bugbear developed Flat Out.
I just guess that because he used bug and bear names.
Yeah.
Other than that, so I figured that was the jumping off point. Going on.
Logic.
Yeah, that's my only weapon here.
Yes. Moving on. APC Games, ATP Games, MXC Games, CCP Games.
CCP.
Dennis gets it.
All right.
Ooh.
The developers of David, Dust. You know this. Oh, also EVE Online.
Oh. Okay. Tisk, yeah.
Tisk.
All right.
But also, I have not ducked into Dust for a long time. I wonder if it's worth picking back up.
That's how I got playing EVE Online. I don't know. I don't like the way they do, like, every time you die, you have to pay for your equipment again.
Yeah, that's really lame.
They got to get money somehow. It's a brave new world. So. Moving on. Zootfly, Hepcat, Swingoat, Lutefisk.
Hepcat.
Nope.
Zootfly?
That is correct. David gets it. They developed First Battalion, a game I know nothing about.
Wait, is this Zoot as in like Zoot Suit?
Yes, Zoot Fly.
Huh.
Okay. Nice. Moving on. We have two rounds left. And the best that either Ben or Dennis can do is hope to tie. So.
Sad face.
Here we
or
go.
Beat one another.
Yes.
This is a war for silver now.
The goal is to not be last. Rollover, Sit Down, Play Dead, Sit Pretty.
Play Dead.
Sit Pretty.
Ben gets it.
Yes.
Which one was it?
It was Play Dead. Who developed, Ben?
I have no idea.
Limbo.
Oh.
Fitting name.
Yeah.
Was that their first outing?
I can't say with any authority. Okay, last one. Extroversion, introversion, intuition, perception.
Introversion?
Yep, he gets it.
Oh, man.
Who developed Darwinia? Uplink, DefCon, and Prison Architect. I really want to play Prison Architect. I just don't want to pay for their alpha. It looks real good.
Wait, is that like a sim prison type of deal?
Yes, yes.
Go like crazy death traps?
I was going to say, I'm hoping this is like Escher's approach to prisons, because that'd be awesome.
It's a sim prison game, except it's a commentary on basically how awful privatized prisons are. So you're running a for-profit prison.
Playdead is indeed the, or well, excuse me.
Limbo.
Limbo is the is indeed the only game made by Playdead.
Yeah, so that was the bonus round. David is the very clear winner. Thank you so much, Jeffrey Lawton, for that.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually really good.
Yeah, we are all very impressed. So thank you. And that leads nicely into...
Multiplayer.
Our multiplayer question, which is where we ask you what you would like to say for these questions. I'm sorry.
Try to mangle that sentence a little more.
Yeah. No, we ask you questions and then you respond to them. It's a discussion kind of thing.
And sometimes the responses are questions.
Was that the case here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we have to answer questions from our questions.
Oh, well. So anyway.
It's getting recursive up in her.
Yeah, they are. So this week's level prompt was, who are your favorite developers? Who do you trust implicitly to make good games? I'm going to come right out the gate here with Robert Noakes on Facebook, who says, in the 90s, I would have said Square. Nowadays, I would say Team Meat, since they produce two great games so far, and I can't wait for Mugenics.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We talked about that game a couple weeks ago, right?
The Lost Level.
It a Lost Level?
Yeah, we never talked about Mugenics.
Oh, then yeah, we talked about that game on The Lost Level and how amazing it looks. So
it looks real good.
Is that a Lost one? Because we talked about it, Colt, but no. I thought that was 2 weeks ago.
No, we didn't. Right?
Not so much Lost, so much as we're holding out on you. It's just too good.
Yeah.
Someone's got to remember this. We talked about how there's like 60 billion permutations of the cats you can have, and
talked about Mugenics on this show.
Okay, it's Lost Level then.
Yeah.
What didn't we talk about on that Lost Level?
Man, it was a veritable wonderland of insight and entertainment. I think that all of us quite frankly suffer for not having heard it.
You can hear a snippet of it at the end of the bonus level. It got a little hairy.
Oh man. So how about this, David? Tell us what Murph says.
Murph says Bethesda Game Studios specifically has not let me down. It has always produced a product that I've played for 100 plus hours. Granted, that list is four games, the past three Elder Scrolls and Fallout 3. Can't say that for Bethesda. Yeah, you can't say that for Bethesda, the publisher. But the record is better than most. I can take a... Oh.
Good.
Okay, we're going to read the question now? All right. If I can take a turn on the board type of game, Z-Man Games consistently puts out quality product. If I can turn the multiplayer question around on you guys, do you guys do any tabletop or board gaming?
No.
I have a great story for this.
Okay.
So for Christmas, we bought my in-laws a game called Munchkin. Have you guys ever heard of it?
Yes.
Oh, it's so amazing.
Isn't it? Yeah. So it's like it's almost like a watered down role playing game. It's very funny and it's very accessible, but you're still like, you know, equipping equipment and spelling spells and monstering monsters, I guess, you know, with the objective of leveling up to level 10. And so, you know, we got it for them and we played it with them once, but we were, you know, it was the first time any of us had played and we were trying to figure out all the rules and so like it, you know, it was fun, but there was a lot of confusion and I kind of left not sure whether or not they liked it. And so a couple weeks later I asked him like, oh, hey, you know, did you touch Munchkin again? Mm-hmm. And my father-in-law goes, oh my gosh, did we? So sorry for telling this story, secondhand, I guess, but they had hosted a friend of theirs that's from Mexico. It's like the 65-year-old guy who I think one of them had worked with or whatever, and he was in town, so they were hosting him, and they got out this the Munchkin game just to kill some time after dinner, and I guess my sister-in-law had spent some time with it and understood it, and you know started trying to explain the rules to the guy, and he listened for a little bit, and he goes, whoa, hold on, I think I got this. And, like, just jump right in and play, and they had like this blast. It was absolutely amazing, And afterwards they were just like, how did you pick that up so easy? And he's like, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to admit this, but I was like hardcore into D&D in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of like this guy had not probably thought about Dungeons and Dragons for 40 plus years.
Yeah.
But was able to jump right back in and just, he said it was the best night he'd ever, you know, had just hanging out and getting to relive some of those days. So, Munchkin is a really fun game.
Yeah.
You know, it does an amazing job of basically Munchkin is a game about all the stupid shit that people actually do in D&D as opposed to what you're supposed to do.
Right, right.
So, like, most of the things in that game, you know, I've seen, you know, I've done or seen people do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love, just to quote the instruction manual, it talks about, you know, how to decide who goes first. It says, have each player roll a six-sided die and then argue about what it means, and whoever is the loudest can go first. And it's like, that's hilarious. I love that.
I haven't done an awful lot of tabletop gaming. I, you know, used to play D&D, but that done fall off. Just so much effort to do it. When I went to Columbus, not me, but the Kingdom of Loathing convention in Columbus to meet up with the Video Games Hot Dog dudes and the guys who run that game. They had a bunch of tabletop games out because people like to play them. Played a really nifty card game called San Juan, it's meant to be like a condensed version of Puerto Rico. It's actually, I forget there's another like sci-fi game that it's supposed to be like based off of, but, it's real neat. I don't know if I can describe the rules just because I'm not well versed in those kind of games, but, it's a very simple game where you take on different roles and, you try and, develop, towns that, you know, get the most resources. So at the end you add up your score and, have a higher score than the other dudes. Yeah.
The big board game that, you know, I've played some and that I really want to play more of is Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Okay.
So it's kind of, it's this weird, like, you know, you're exploring a haunted house, and, you know, but then halfway through, once you draw one of the cards, one of the players becomes the monster.
Mm-hmm.
But it's randomly selected which monster they become, and each monster, you know, their rules for how you kill the monster and then how the monster wins is completely different.
Okay.
So like one of them we played, the monster was this like eternally growing snake. So its rules was every time it moved, it was also considered to be in the room it just left.
Okay.
You know, it just kind of grows through the haunted house, and you had to get some, like, so it had to get to a certain length before the players could get some Mayan artifact and, like, give it to the guy who's playing the priest and get the priest into the room to, like, dispel the snake.
Huh.
But it's really, really crazy game. But
yeah. Like there are a bunch of games like that in Arkham Horror, which look really interesting, but they require so much setup. And that's where something like the iPad can be really can be really neat. Like, I like playing Ticket to Ride on my iPad. I don't know if I would want to deal with all those pieces on an actual board. You know,
I have played Ticket to Ride in its board game form, and it's not that bad. It's a lot of fun.
It's really fun. It's a nice little. Number management, you know, management game.
Yeah.
Cool. So who wants to chime in with a favorite of theirs? I'm having a lot of real difficulty with this, honestly.
Mine is easy.
Okay.
So I can go. I got a post on my Facebook wall, personal wall. So I'll read that because it echoes my sentiment.
Okay.
In large part. So Ryan on Facebook says, Valve and Naughty Dog. I used to trust BioWare, but no longer. Dragon Age started a downward slide. Too many studios have been picked up by huge publishers, EA, and started turning out crap. But I totally agree with Naughty Dog. All the way back to Crash Bandicoot through The Jack and Daxter series is obviously like my favorite of all time. Uncharted is solid through and through, and The Last of Us looks awesome. Even down to like the kart racers that punctuated Crash and Jack, like all of their games have just been stellar. And actually, I'm not even sure that the Naughty Dog developed the kart racers, but just they create franchises that are really good.
Mm-hmm. I would play at The Last of Us kart racer. I really liked Mad Max.
That's funny. Ben, what does Carlo say?
Carlo says that Valve has made many of the games that I love. I have probably put the most number of hours and drawn the most enjoyment from Blizzard games, though.
Yeah.
So that's fair.
I can understand that. Time to rest. Yeah.
I was going to say, I can jump in with mine, too, because I agree on the Valve sentiment. You know, they don't really put out bad games, it seems.
They pick their shots. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing that I really like about Valve is I don't know if they were the first to do it or not, but how they do commentary on their games.
Yeah.
So with at least Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and Episode 2 and The Lost Isle and Portal 1 and Portal 2, they have commentaries on all those games, and also the Left 4 Dead series too. So that's really nice, because that helps you kind of appreciate the games more, because you can kind of pick out some of the little things that they did as far as development goes. But then also it kind of cues you into the amount of player testing that they do. And yeah. It seems like they're much more attuned to that than other companies. And that was something that I was thinking earlier this week when I was playing Far Cry. There was one mission in particular where it's just like, oh, well, this is like a terrible level design. Like, how many people did they, you know, like put through this level and see if they could navigate it? Well, you know, anyway, that's a side beef. You never really have that with Valve. I think a personal favorite studio of mine is Rocksteady Studios, since they also seem to not put out a bad game with Urban Chaos and the two Batman games.
Yeah.
So
I could see that. I'll go ahead and do mine, because it's real kind of bland. I mean, Valve obviously is a good one. If I was going to say something more controversial, Harmonix. I haven't played anything that they've made that I didn't like a lot.
What have they
done? They haven't done anything recently. That's the problem. They're working on new stuff, and like you see articles about it, but they are really playing their hand close to their chest.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, didn't they only make one game?
I mean, they made the first two Guitar Heroes and Rock Band 1-2-3 and the Beatles Rock Band, and also Frequency, Amplitude, and then Rock Band Blitz, all of which are really, really good.
Now, question, were they responsible for Green Day Rock Band?
Yes.
All right.
Which is a problem. That's problematic.
Yeah. Let's not gloss over that.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. So there's that. Will via the contact form says, the only developer still around that I trust completely is Ken Levine of Irrational Games. He's not necessarily one of the oldest designers still in the business, but he began his career when I was heavily into computer games and helped design Thief, The Dark Project, one of my favorite games of all time. He also went on to design System Shock 2, Freedom Force, SWAT 4, Tribes, and eventually Bioshock. Every project has been unique in its own way and carries that indescribable feeling of quality that comes with a true investment in the product. I've lost that feeling from designers I had liked in the past, such as Todd Howard of Bethesda, but Ken and Irrational have yet to let me down. So yeah, that is correct. It takes a bit of a different approach, because it's not like one particular studio that is going through this. You know, it's a dude who's been at all of those studios, right?
Yeah, I think that's cool. We talk about the auteur theory.
Yeah.
A lot in games, and I think it's interesting that you can pick out someone like that.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis Rejala.
Yeah, she says, historically, Capcom, Konami, and Square were some of my old console favorites. For present-day devs, I like a few random indies, such as Frozenbyte, but also larger companies such as Valve and Bethesda. Man, Valve has turned into a buzzword here. I really value the ingenuity and variety of indie devs. However, I'm more willing to sink money into those rather than the work of heavy hitter mainstream companies.
Right. Yep. Agreed.
I feel like Square is kind of you know, nowadays is one of those things where they aren't as consistently stellar as they used to be, but still all of their games, you know, they tend not to do the just let's just make this game for money thing.
I'd be hard pressed to mention a Square Enix game that I've like really really like dug on in the past decade. Like okay, so maybe Final Fantasy XII. I really really like that, but the last one that I could unabashedly say I love through and through is Chrono Cross, right? So it's hard. It's hard. Like they tend to put a lot of production value into their games, but they have this, you know, like really stodgy Japanese-ness to them, like where they're, you know, afraid to take risks and they think throwing money at the problem will solve it. That kind of keeps them from being like really stellar in a way that a Valve would be, right?
I guess, yeah, I guess maybe to a certain degree this goes back to kind of some of the discussion we had on our Facebook thing, but I guess I'm just happy that they're not EA or Activision.
Yeah.
It's kind of why I'm saying that they won't just blatantly try to screw me over,
I suppose. How about this, David? Say what Christopher says.
Sure. Christopher says, Darkling Room... for adventure games, or more specifically horror adventure games, these are the best. Between the three Darkfall games and The Lost Crown, I've spent many a scary day and night getting through these games without really having anything to fight with or fight. You don't really die or anything, but you do have to try to survive not being a pussy and quitting for the day. I love that.
Yeah.
And for what are basically just point-and-click adventure games, they have the atmosphere down. Also, Black Isle and Troika. Holy crap, they've made amazing games. Between the two of them, Fallout, Planescape Torment, Arcanum, Vampire Bloodlines, ooh, that was good, yeah. And the Temple of Elemental Evil, after fan mods and patches.
Everything they've done is good after fan mods and patches. Yeah.
So, by far the best that there has ever been for Western CRPGs was CRPGs.
Computer role-playing games.
Okay. Yeah. Those sorts of games I've played more often than any genre, regardless of the amount of time needed to play through them. And due to their non-linearity, there was always been new stuff to discover and do.
Yeah. So I have never heard of Darkling Room before, but
me want to check them out.
Yeah,
see, I've heard of the actual games. I think those are really old, aren't they?
A little bit, but you know, old games tend to be on GOG. You know,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I think that's where I saw them.
Yeah, I'm always looking for new horror games. Yeah, and then Troika, like that. That's something like they're the best. Like them and like Obsidian, well, I mean Black Isle, or Obsidian came from Black Isle, you know, developers who have never, like, who make great games that, like, aren't good games, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So
are they the ones who made Vampire?
Yeah. Like I said, they're Troika did Vampire, but it's most of the same personnel and like really similar philosophies on the kinds of games they make.
Okay.
Let's round things out. Dennis, read what Gary says.
Sure. Gary says, it's really hard to think of a developer this applies to. At this point, I can only think of two. Bethesda as a developer, not a publisher, and Frictional Games. Bethesda keeps making the same game over and over, but it's one that's really interesting to me, and Frictional has engineered an enormous amount of trust based on only 3.5 products. Very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, Frictional, I definitely agree with. I mean, Amnesia, Penumbra, you know, like that is a really good pedigree.
I was about to say that reading Chris's post makes me want to go play Penumbra. So
yes, well, I think you own Penumbra.
I do. I'm looking at it on my desktop right now. I wonder what I'll be talking about next week, guys.
I don't know. It might be better for you to try Amnesia first.
I don't, I, but you would I'd have to buy get it.
Yeah, yeah. You have to buy it. But It's a little bit more accessible. I found that I was more hungry for Penumbra after playing Amnesia. It was one of those things that made you want more. So any
I'll take that under advisement.
Yes. Any final thoughts on developers? I'll take that as a no. All right. So thank you so much for responding to that. Everybody has their opinions. Most of those opinions happen to be Valve or Bethesda. A lot of PC game studios coming up here, which is pretty neat. yeah. So if you want to participate in these discussions and you're listening and you haven't participated, check out the Facebook group. That is facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast, and also @DuckFeed TV on Twitter, which is where those are blasted out, those particular prompts. We welcome your input.
The end boss.
End bosses. What are we going to do with these end bosses? They're here. So I'm going to go first. I'm reading The Watchmen now. I don't know anything about it. Like I've gone in completely unspoiled. I basically went in knowing there was a dude with a weird mask and a gigantic blue dong. And that was everything I knew. I'm about halfway through it. Haven't seen the movie or anything.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, no, I have not seen the movie at all. It's really, really good. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'll be interested. You should watch the movie after you read the book. I came to the movie before I came to the graphic novel, and absolutely loved the movie and couldn't really get into the graphic novel.
That's weird.
Whereas, yeah, I know a lot of people who came to the graphic novel first, loved the graphic novel, and then hated the movie. So I wonder if there's this weird, you know, whichever one you come to first is the preferred version.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I read all the Walking Dead comics, and just this morning I started watching the Walking Dead series, and I can't get over like how different they look. than their character, than the drawn versions. They should have given them like weird plastic surgery or something. I don't know. but that's mine. I just wanted to get that out because I really like it. I know I'm about like 30 years too late, but.
Well, the story does take place in the 80s, right?
This is true. Yeah. Let's go next.
I'll say mine.
Good.
Okay.
My mom and stepdad are coming to visit Las Vegas this weekend. Oh, cool. So my end boss is getting places to sit in my apartment.
is there like an IKEA nearby? Is there a,
there's not,
you got a floor, don't you?
I do. I'll try and be slightly more hospitable than the floor.
there's Targets and such, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm kind of fortunate in that I've bought most of the furniture that I'm going to need for my new place. I had to go buy a shitload of rugs, but that's cool though. People are starting to come out. I mean, you've been out there for what, 2 months now?
Yeah, it's almost 2 months.
Yeah. Oh man, we miss you here.
I'll come back sometime. I know. Eventually.
Yeah. So for want of a chair, who wants to go next?
I've got something fairly short. Did you see over in Britain, Batman is real?
No.
I think I might have heard about this.
A fellow dressed as Batman, apparently the police were looking for some, I think maybe armed robber of some sort, and until a fellow dressed as Batman proceeded to drag the guy into the police station and turn him in.
Nice.
And the best part is he apparently then immediately just kind of disappeared completely Batman style.
This is the best thing.
Threw a smoke pellet on the ground.
Until we find him dead in the streets.
I would love to see that police report, though.
Can I make a side note here?
Yes, you may.
There was I don't know if it was on The Daily Show or Colbert, but it was this one author who was following around people who were like this, who were just like dressing up like superheroes and like going around the like crack dens and like trying to get people to stop selling crack or like buying prostitutes and just like or renting prostitutes but just giving them money and like talking about their lives and trying to get them to like turn away from it, like doing all these kind of like weird things. But then, like, talking about how, like, when they would do this to these drug dealers, you know, like, the drug dealers would just be like, look, man, you don't want to die in a superhero costume. Like, what? Like, go away. Stop this or whatever. But eventually they would all just, like, leave. They would get tired of the superhero person trying to do this. God. So it's a – yeah, it's crazy that there's a subculture of people who do this. I really hope he has one.
I forget his name, though.
Dark
Bunny. Shadow Hair.
Yeah, Shadow Hair.
Yeah.
I just really hope none of them get hurt.
yeah, me too. But you know, that's the life of a masked vigilante. It's funny. Yeah. I mentioned The Watchmen, and then yeah. Want to button it up?
I got one quick end, boss.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to skip you. Okay, fine. Let's unbutton it real quick.
Two quick ones. Now that I think about it, so they're both short though.
Okay.
One is obviously co-op gaming has been on my mind. So me and Chad on the Facebook page had some interesting discussions about that. So I'd love to hear anyone's suggestions for good co-op games or just games that are fun to watch, which I know we talked about a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, any of those specifically, I know we got a lot of married people that listen. So if you play anything with your wife, let me know. then the other thing is there are still two free codes for Rayman Jungle Run up for grabs for the first two people to go to our Facebook page, find the post where I say the cake is a lie, and to respond in turn.
The new response is all your base are belong to us.
Yes.
Ooh, that's, okay. You beat Let's go me older. Two way. You beat me two way.
I will accept either or. But yeah, still two free codes available. So hit that up.
Yeah. So it needs to be all your base are belong to us. Properly punctuated.
Ooh. Right.
So there we go. We're putting a new wrinkle into that. So yeah, giving away free shit.
Yeah, as much as you guys are willing to take it, it's there for the taking.
Why not? Cool.
Communist.
Let's burn it up. All right, that was the 14th level. Thank you so much, you guys, for joining us for this, for contributing to that masterwork. So what can you do? There are some things you can do that we really appreciate. We mentioned the Facebook group at the end of the multiplayer, but there are other things you can do there besides participate in the discussion. For that particular section, that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, where you can talk with us and we interact. There was some spirited debate over whether or not Blizzard is creatively bankrupt or not. it was good. I was reading that. There was a lot of going back and forth in there. Mm-hmm. As usual, the corrections and such. But yeah, no, everybody here is active on that. So it's a hip and happening place to be. Other things you can do, follow me on Twitter or the network on Twitter. That is DuckFeedTV, is the username just for general, announcements about the show. Man, I'm kind of drawing a blank. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you'd like to support the network, monetarily, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, where you can use our Amazon link. It's an affiliate link. It doesn't change your experience. You just click that, add something to your cart, and then we get a little kickback from that. Somebody bought a whole computer on there, which was real nice.
Ooh.
It's it doesn't say who you are. I don't know who you are. I just saw all that stuff. So yeah, that pretty much paid for the bandwidth this month, which was really nice. So it does make a difference in helping us, be able to afford the ongoing costs so we can afford, things like new equipment or advertising or anything like that. So greatly appreciate it. Is there anything I'm missing, fellas?
Well, and the best part is you can just buy really weird things just to mess with Cole.
It's nice. Like, I watch it. Like, again, it's entirely anonymous, but some of you live fascinating lives.
there was Batman armor there bought from someone in the UK.
like a whole Batman rig out. I didn't think you could buy a grappling hook online. I was proven wrong. Yeah, let's do the whole Twitter roundup. Like I said, I'm Cole Ross. That's at Cole Ross on Twitter. KOLEROSS.
I'm Dennis Furia at D Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
And, until next time. Thanks. I guess all I'm saying best is that, you know, if you got a body in the trunk, you're not going to be running too many red lights. Okay.